This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 30th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 288. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, the Surrey cop swap that won't stop. The MMA panel reconvenes to kick it around after the NDP punted the decision on whether to keep the RCMP back to Surrey City Council. Mario Canseco of Research Co. and Andy Yan of the Simon Fraser University City Program are my guests. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. It's time for the MMA panel on the Breaker.News podcast. I'm Mackin, and I'm joined by Mario Canseco, the president of Research Co., and Andy Yan, the director of the City Program at Simon Fraser University. This time, there is only one topic, the April 28th announcement by Solicitor General Mike Farnworth. Instead of making a decision, the NDP's top cop recommended that Surrey replace the RCMP with the Surrey Police Service.
The best way to ensure public safety and to put this difficult time behind us is with a municipal police force in Surrey.
Ex-Mayor Doug McCallum, the father of the Surrey Police Service, thinks he's getting the last laugh.
I just want to say, what a great decision. I feel like doing some dancing up here, you know. And it's a great decision for the people of Surrey.
But today's mayor, Brenda Locke, promised voters last fall that she would keep the RCMP, and she says she's not backing down.
Our decision is exactly what it was in December, that we will keep the RCMP as a police of jurisdiction.
When he made his announcement, Farnworth said it would cost $30 million extra every year to replace the RCMP, and he offered provincial funding for 5 years if it proceeds with the Surrey Police Service. He also said it would cost $72 million if Surrey decides to disband the Surrey Police Service and revert to the RCMP detachment and make it full strength again. Andy Yan on the MMA panel, were you surprised by the recommendation as well as the reaction?
In one way, it's not that surprising because, I mean, frankly, what talking this about is political theater. What's that line? Tragedy plus time equals comedy. And that we're really now seeing the tragedy of the profound challenges and I think concerns around public safety and attempts to kind of deal with it, but then also the realization of the complexities of what it means to deal with public safety, that police, of course, are just one means of achieving public safety, but then public safety, it's a simple but yet not necessarily cheap way of dealing, or perhaps even sometimes effective way of dealing with public safety. And I think that this is a scramble, frankly, trying to do an honorable retreat for all parties with the safety exception of Doug McCallum, that I think that perhaps there is more punting that is happening here than occurs at the BC Lions practice field in Surrey. So that I think a lot of this, I think, is really trying to deal with, I think, a issue that nobody really wants to deal with simply because of, frankly, being a, you know, 9 provincial seats, perhaps at in the city of Surrey, facing a 12.5% increase in taxes, largely because of bringing in a local police force that I think it does is a it's a political football slash hot potato.
Mario Canseco of Research Co., what do you think? Are you surprised by the recommendation and the reaction?
I think it was in a way expected. You don't want to come across as a government, especially one that hasn't faced the voters, that is doing something that is extremely heavy-handed. If they had come in and said, this is what you're doing, we're the government, we're in charge here, it would have been seen very, very differently by the residents of Surrey, even if they are in favor of what the government has done. So this allows them the opportunity to say, we think this is in your best interest. This is what we would recommend you to do. We're not forcing you. We're not mandating you to do anything. But it also caps a series of unfortunate events for Brenda Locke, particularly the moment when she said that everybody supported what she wanted to do. And we had people who were at that meeting saying, well, actually, that wasn't really what we said or what you thought you heard. So it hasn't been easy to try to handle this. And it also shows how problematic Surrey has become when it comes to mayoral candidates who win an election, assuming that the support of voters means that it's a mandate for everything that's on their list. We came out of the 2018 election with 45,564 votes in favor of McCallum, and McCallum saying, this is a mandate for everything I want to do, including the Surrey Police Service. And now we're into 2022, 33,311 votes for Brenda Locke, which means that we have to do everything Brenda Locke wants. Like, one way to solve this would be to actually vote on these things and to have something like what we've had when major decisions have to be taken, which is referenda. This is the only way in which you can have a fair field in which the ideas are going to be put across. But winning an election with a tiny, tiny proportion of eligible voters, okay, and then saying this is what we want to do and this is what we're doing, certainly hasn't worked, because it's the second time we see it.
And on that note, the police in any municipality, the police department, the fire department, it's one of the biggest line items. It's a fundamental cornerstone of any community. And on the issue of referendum, we just look just a few feet south of the southern border of Surrey is Whatcom County in Washington State. If this had been Blaine, Washington, instead of Surrey, there would have already been a referendum by now. It would have been at the start of the process. But should there be a legislation for referendums that requires fundamental decisions of this nature to automatically go to the voters either at the next election or at the next convenience to have a by-election style referendum? Mario Canseco.
I am all for it. One of the reasons is we see other situations that we faced in the past. Imagine a scenario where John Horgan forms the government after 2017 and goes, oops, I said I wanted electoral reform and we're going to carry on through it, proportional representation all the way. Don't worry, be happy. You know, we went through an actual process of figuring out what the question would be. People voted on it. It was rejected. That's fine. You know, it's something that you wanted to do, but you can't just implement it because people voted for your party or you were able to form the government. Similar situation when it came to funding transit projects back in 2014. You know, we're going to put this in front of voters because this is a significant change. It's a new tax. It's a situation that we need to deal with directly with a campaign where people can actually see both sides next to each other and try to figure out how they want to vote. It's the way in which other jurisdictions have done it in the past. But Surrey seems to be this magical place where you can win an election with 30-something percent of the vote and assume that you're a dictator.
Andy,
I mean, I'm careful. I certainly see the possibilities for direct democracy, but then I also see the tremendous turmoil that is happening in the United States in terms of initiatives, in terms of voter plebiscites that are prone for abuse, that we have, you know, some sizable parties that are manipulating a certain policy avenues because they are able to hold a referendum and in one way hold a lot of minority rules. So I'm careful that if such a process would have to be carefully constructed so it wouldn't be able to have this level of abuse. But I think underlying the challenges of governance in Surrey is one of the fastest growing communities in Canada, one of the most dynamic and diverse communities in the country too. And I think that it makes governance fairly challenging because of just really how much the city of Surrey changes just between every census period. Indeed, every year that you see the tremendous growth that's involved. And I think the challenges of creating decisive governance, much less engagement into a place like the city of Surrey. So I think that it's really, I think, highlighting the challenges of governance in a place like the city of Surrey.
But what does this decision, no decision, this recommendation to send it back to City Council, what does this do, or does it do anything for the NDP in Surrey?
Well, it's the safest possible solution because it's not something that makes them look nasty towards a municipal government. Now, that being said, if we are headed into a campaign where BC United decides to push completely on the issue of safety, If you have a couple of things that go wrong in Surrey, if you have a couple of instances that get covered extensively, if you have a different type of Surrey 6 incident or something where a police officer gets shot, then that allows Kevin Falcon and BC United to say, see, if we had done what Brenda Locke, who I have worked with in the past, wanted, none of this would have happened. So in a way, it's a ticking time bomb. If things happen the way they're expected to happen, it's not going to be problematic for the NDP. But if we have a situation that BC United can exploit to their advantage and say, crime is a problem right here, where we have a situation where the NDP made a decision or no decision or made a recommendation that was heeded, then that could be problematic. But it's weird. I mean, we just saw Pierre Poilievre say BC is an area of the country where crime is rampant. And it's the responsibility of the premier, who belongs to a party who I don't like, but not to the mayors, who are closer to the parties I like. So we could be in a situation that is similar to that in the next campaign, where they can say Vancouver is fine because Ken Sim is there and my people run his campaign, but the situation is different in Surrey.
And Ian, what do you think this does to the NDP in Surrey? Make a difference for them or not?
I think they're carefully walking the line on this. That again, it's 9 seats that are at stake here. And I think that in one way they want to be decisive, but yet on the other side of it is they're very careful to be prescriptive, just given the kind of dynamics that are happening in the city of Surrey. I think that a lot of this is really, I think I agree with Mario in terms of it takes like a few incidents to really have this go one way or the other. I think that it's interesting to kind of see that. Today was the Supreme Court decision on the Surrey 6 and really the tragedy that brought in. And yet at the same time, it goes in towards the behavior of the RCMP in part was the reason why it made the decisions it did over the Surrey 6. It didn't overturn the conviction, but it overturned some of the evidence, which I think, you know, kind of goes into a certain dynamics towards, I think, ongoing concerns around public safety. But again, the issue about public safety isn't necessarily just one about police, but I think the overall, I think, concerns in the community that Surrey in certain parts doesn't feel as safe as it could be.
Mm-hmm. And finally, this decision does have ripple effects that reach Vancouver. Now, Brenda Locke and the council can still go forward, as she said they promised to do, to keep the RCMP and cancel the Surrey Police. Of course, there's consequences now. And there's also the carrot that Mike Farnworth is hanging over Surrey. But if the Surrey Police Service had been shut down on April 28th, if the announcement had been made by Mike Farnworth, that would have made life a lot easier for Ken Sim. The promise to hire 100 new police officers would have been much easier. What do you think of this situation here, especially when you've got the campaign manager Karim Alam going on a web conference this week with the University of California, Berkeley, explaining his campaign strategy, basically?
We ran on hiring 100 new police officers and 100 mental health nurses. 100 new police officers, we already have 1,600. So adding another 100, so what's that, 4 or 5% new police officers, is that really going to have a dramatic impact on reducing crime? Probably not. Are the 100 mental health nurses going to help get more people help? Yes, it will have a positive impact. But is it going to make measurable differences in resolving some of these public safety issues? Likely not. The solution will require, you know, a significant ramp up investment from the provincial government in mental health and social support services, as well from the federal government as well too. And those are things that are going to be out of his hands. And so his success is going to be really tied to his ability to maintain a relationship with the premier and with the prime minister.
I think within that same conference, really talking about how the appeal was certainly for those on the right with 100 police officers and those on the left with 100 nurses. And yet I think the kind of profound issues is the fact that we're all facing a labor crunch. And I think the interesting question is, where are they going to find the additional 100 officers, much less the 100 nurses? How can they afford it? Because I think that really what we're also going to be facing, I think, is some sizable negotiations when it comes to labor contracts in the forthcoming year. I think so, which probably also adds on to some further challenges in terms of local and provincial government of the kind of ongoing costs of maintaining these types of services when you already have for, and what's interesting about Vancouver and Surrey is the fact that both governments, both new governments had double digit tax increases in their first year.
Mm-hmm. Mario.
That is one of the crucial aspects of this. You know, in a way, it could be seen as good politics. You know, we're going to really hammer you in the first year, and then the increases are going to be single digit, maybe even low single digits the next 3 years, so that you forget that we dinged you for the first one. It's a strategy that has worked for other municipalities in the sense that people forget about those initial moments, but you need to have the opportunity to show that the services are actually better, that there's a feeling of safety towards it from everybody, and that the government is doing what it is supposed to be doing. It's going to be more complicated because things aren't changing as fast as people expect. And right. One of the reasons for that is essentially the focus on other more cosmetic situations related to the city of Vancouver, such as revitalizing the nightlife or having more fountains than Kansas City. It's part of the process, but it's not something that people voted for. And you know, it's kind of confusing in the sense of you want to bring swagger back to the city, but you were elected because people cared about a specific set of things that haven't adequately been addressed. That can be part of the problem. You know, I don't think somebody who feels unsafe is going to be very happy that they can now drink cider a couple of blocks away from a street where the speed limit is now 40 kilometers an hour instead of 50. That is not going to bring those voters to say, I feel better about the situation. It might be something that works part of the time, but if the next election rolls around and all of the problems that people complained about are still there, then it's not going to be that easy.
Well, it's the issue of the problems staying there, and then now people paying more taxes. Because I think for both cities and both, if you will, administrations, we're talking about, I think, a discovery that campaigning is easy, governance is hard.
Yeah. The MMA panel on the Breaker.News podcast: Mario Canseco, the president of Research Co., and Andy Yan, the director of the city program at Simon Fraser University. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.news podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Legislative Yuan establishes Taiwan-Ireland Friendship Group, Taiwan-Ireland Interparliamentary Amity Association, to promote bilateral friendship. Democratic Progressive Party legislator Chen Qingmin said she hopes to use this organization to promote friendship between Taiwan and Irish lawmakers and government agencies at all levels. Chen also said she was invited to give a speech in the Irish Parliament in May to share Taiwan's experience of freedom and democracy. She will also visit the World Health Assembly in Geneva. Irish lawmaker John McGuinness congratulated Chen and promised support. In Kyoto news, Kishida may visit South Korea in early May to further mend ties. Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida is considering visiting South Korea in early May to meet with President Yoon Suk-yeol so the countries can further improve ties to address North Korea's ballistic missile program, sources involved in bilateral relations said Friday. The last visit to South Korea by a Japanese premier was in February 2018, when then-Prime Minister Shinzo Abe attended the opening ceremony of the Pyeongchang Winter Olympics. In Hong Kong Free Press, Hong Kong woman jailed 4 months over seditious Twitter and Facebook posts. 48-year-old La Oi Wa's posts, which included protest songs and imagery, were aimed to bring into hatred or contempt or to excite disaffection against the local government and Beijing, prosecutors told the court. According to local media, the content in question targeted the Chinese Communist Party and included the popular 2019 protest slogan, "Liberate Hong Kong, Revolution of Our Times," which a local court declared in July 2021 as being capable of inciting others to commit secession. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Breaker.news.
News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Secretary of State Shamaya Fagan pledged to build trust in Oregon government. Now she won't talk about paid pot side job. Democrat Shamaya Fagan did not return a phone call on Thursday, skipped a Friday morning press conference about an audit of state marijuana regulations, and declined to come to the door of her Happy Valley home early Friday afternoon. But around 7:30 p.m. on Friday, Fagan issued a statement through her office saying she was contracted by the Oregon-based cannabis company to review the landscape for expanding their operations outside of Oregon. In King 5, Seattle Kraken donate field hockey kits to 162 Western Washington schools. 36 Tacoma schools are the most recent recipients of the kits, which each cost about $1,000. Between Tacoma, Seattle, Highline, Renton, and Tukwila school districts, 162 kits have been distributed. The kits are shared with Metro Parks to be used during after-school hours. In the Times Colonist, buildings near Langford apartment tower evacuated, new offers of help unveiled. Residents will receive coverage of accommodation or building assistance with family or friends, transportation and food, along with more money from the building's owner. The residential tower in Langford's downtown has twice had its occupancy permit pulled because of investigations by the engineers and geoscientists of BC over structural flaws. Residents were initially evacuated in December 2019 after the Engineering Association opened an investigation when an engineer who was not involved in the project raised concerns about the design. Two engineers involved in the original work lost their registration with the provincial body and are not allowed to practice engineering in the province. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to researchers who are seeking a cure for cystic fibrosis. It is Cystic Fibrosis Month in British Columbia. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 30th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 30th of April in 2013, the Prince of Orange became the King of the Netherlands? Willem Alexander was a frequent visitor to Vancouver with the IOC committee that oversaw planning for the 2010 Winter Olympics. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's PATREON.com/TheBreakerNews. Until next week.